I believe this is Ms. Poe from the board office. I believe we do have all board members join a meeting. The board members will need to take themselves off me, so I have everybody automatically muted. So if the board members will please take themselves off mute for the roll call that we're about to do.
All right. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and start. The time now is 7:47, and I call the meeting of the Arizona Board of Psychologists Examiners to order. This meeting is videoed, hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been properly noticed of this fact and have been supplied with meeting access information. Please note that continuing education credits will not be granted for listening to the meeting. Ms. Poe, would you call the roll, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. Ms. Shreve?
Present.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Flowers?
Present.
Dr. Bohansky?
Present.
Dr. Davey?
Present.
Mr. Dinar?
Good morning. Present.
Dr. Gill? I think Dr. Gill must have himself muted. I've tried to unmute him. Did you see him on the call, though? Ms. LaBoy?
Yes, good morning. Present.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Dr. Malott?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Sorry about that. My dog. I have to take care of my dog here for a minute. All right. Welcome, everybody. It's so good to see everybody. Item 3, remarks and announcements. Please note that the times stated on the agenda are approximate. The board makes every effort to begin proceedings at the scheduled time. The board may suspend the discussion of one agenda item, proceed to a timed item, and then return to a former item. Our next item on the agenda is a very exciting one, presentation of plaque to Dr. Bob Bohansky for distinguished service and recognition. And I'd like to acknowledge before we start, his sons are with us today. Michael, wave. There's Michael. And Jason. And I have to say that it's a pleasure to see your faces. You don't know this, but I know all about you. Anyone that knows Dr. Bob knows about his boys and his pride of you and being a dad and grandson and grandfather now is what's most important to him. So it's really nice to meet you in person, and you got an incredible dad. So with that, let me just say a couple things about your dad. It's my honor and pleasure to present Dr. Bohansky with a special award today. It's recognizing him for distinguished work as a psychologist regulator. He has served on the board since 2010, including the chair and many other positions, and he made the chair look very easy, so I said I'd do it, and it's not easy. It's really hard, and your dad made it look super easy. His accomplishments for Arizona include champion legislation resulting in the state being the first to join the Interstate Compact SIPAC, leading the way for Arizona to be the early adopter of the ECPP Part 2 skills, and shaping a number of policy decisions always in the public's best interest. He has been recognized with the Fellowship Award in 2019 by the ASPPB, and he has served on numerous committees for them. And of course, with all the stuff your dad does for this board, he has a day job, which for 20 years or more, he has been responsible for training future psychologists more than we could probably ever count, and providing professional development to psychologists currently practicing. And we know that in spite of any challenges or that come his way, he takes them with enthusiasm and strength. And I have to say, I've worked with Dr. Bob for years. I think it's like over at least 7 or 8 years been on this board. He's an amazing individual, and he has such a passion for the students. You know, every time I think that I've seen him in a meeting, and when he was chair, he always made sure to acknowledge them and let them know how important they were and how important the rules and regulations were. He's a great leader. He has a compassionate heart. Whenever we've had a look at tough cases, he is and yet he has a, yet he knows the rules, he knows what should be done. Just an incredible person. I know, Dr. Malott, you wanted to say a few words?
Yes, I sure do. So, if you can give 1 second, yeah. Let me turn my video on. Hi, I'm Dr. Malott, and I'm a psychologist board member, and I've been on the board as long as Dr. Bohensky has been on this board, and I'm
longer.
Happy to... Louder?
Longer.
Yeah, I've been... Oh, yeah, longer, but I've had the distinct pleasure of getting to know Dr. Bob over the last 10 years, and I know him in many capacities, and so I'm going to talk about all the different capacities, not just on the board. Dr. Bob and I are colleagues at the university level. He has been a champion of students, as Ms. Shreve said, in terms of he has created the largest internship program in the state and takes, and help me with this number, Dr. Bob, how many interns every year?
We're surpassed 25. We're up around 29 interns. We finally surpassed Johns Hopkins as not only the largest in the state, but the largest in the United States for training psychologists to go into public health to serve the indigent, the most needy of our citizens.
And that is a tremendous service. Arizona is one of those states that has one of the highest, the ratio of number of citizens that needs, just number of citizens to psychologists is one of the lowest. And so creating these internship opportunities that are not only valuable, but they're also APA accredited, which is critical for students to get licensed in any state in the country. A lot of states require certain parameters, and by Dr. Bohensky creating this wonderful opportunity for our students, plus he takes practicum students, which is training along the way. It's been a huge service to the state and students in all our programs, NAU, ASU, U of A, Argosy, Midwestern, have all benefited from this wonderful opportunity. And Dr. Bob teaches in different programs across the state, including NAU, Argosy, Midwestern. So he has shared his knowledge with hundreds of students, and I think his students are his faithful followers. They all remember his lectures. I think your sons probably also remember your many, many lectures you probably gave them as well, too. So, and he's also just a kind and compassionate man. And that is a wonderful characteristic. You know, to have all this knowledge and kindness and compassion is something I really admire. He does speak his mind, and sometimes I've had to kind of nudge him at board meetings, but he takes that well. I'm kind of the opposite, but we still get along. But Dr. Bob, just thank you for your tremendous service and this great recognition. So have really enjoyed this time, and I'm glad you're still on the board and serving the citizens of Arizona.
Thank you, Dr. Malott. Dr. Bohensky, do you have your award there to show everybody?
I'll try to hold this up.
Oh, that's good. Can you read the inscription for us all? We can't read it.
Yeah, it says Robert Bohensky, PhD, FNAP, recognizing a decade of dedicated and distinguished services for the citizens of Arizona, Board of Psychologist Examiners.
Dr. Bohensky, there's not a more deserving person than you. You totally deserve this. You are incredible. Do you have a few words you'd like to say to us or to your sons?
I'll leave the other Dr. Bohensky to say anything he wants, but let me tell you a kind of a funny little thing about this. I had no idea this was coming, and it came in the mail last week. And I opened it up and I read it.
Speaking.
Wait a minute, Dr. Gill, I think you're not on mute. So Ms. Poe, can you make sure everybody is on mute? There we go. There you go. Sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Bob.
I opened the darn thing up with a friend here who had brought my mail up, and I read the darn thing, and I said, oh, my God, I've been replaced, and thought this was my kind of farewell kiss-off. So I sat there looking at it and got a little emotional and said, oh, well, I don't have to get up for those early morning meetings anymore. They've replaced me. So it was kind of a wonderful thing to receive. And at the same time, I went through a little bit of sadness and loss because I was expecting the next thing I'd get was a letter from the governor saying, sorry about that, but you're done. But I'm still around. And I did, as Heidi knows, I did submit another application to try to do another term. I love the work. I love the people I work with. I love the job that we have in trying to make this the strongest state in terms of psychology and service to the public. I think having a public health person on the board is important because, as few people know, over 80% of the funds that go to mental health services are provided through public health agencies. We need more psychology in public health. We need greater efficiency and effectiveness in public health. And if I, in some small way, can contribute to that workforce and programs that are efficient, effective, and demonstrate outcomes, I'd love to keep doing that until I can't do anything anymore. I certainly don't need the recognition, but I appreciate it. And I thank all of you and whoever the hell was behind the scenes and putting this together. Much thanks.
It's well deserved, Dr. Bob. We really appreciate it. And it's great to have your sons here today. We appreciate you guys joining us. Your father's been an incredible asset to this state and to psychology in the state. Thank you. We're going to move on to the next item, which is another recognition for board member, for Dr. Flowers. He has served his five-year term. Makes it sound like a bad thing, huh? Five-year term. And we're releasing him. We don't want to, though. We find ourselves, of course, reluctantly having to recognize Dr. Flowers this year on the board. His successor has been chosen, will be starting in August. Dr. Flowers, you know that we somewhat tease you because you're so detail-oriented and we're in complete awe, and that's only because we're all jealous because you see every little thing, and I have, and I'm sure the other board members have so much respect for that. Thank you for your dedication and your enthusiasm for your role for protecting the public. The Arizona is significantly better because of you and because of all you've done on this board. We hope that this plaque that we're presenting, which we're presenting in a safe distance, did you receive it, Dr. Flowers?
Yes.
Yes. Effectively, we want, expresses our gratitude for all the time, effort that you've put into this board. You've been incredible to work with. Would you like to show your plaque?
Sure. I was told to unwrap it live, so.
There you go. We want to see your surprised face.
Okay.
Ms. Shreve, could I say something about Dr. Flowers?
And anyone else that like to, please, Dr. Millott.
Yeah, I just want to thank Dr. Flowers. As you notice, his attention for detail was incredible. And two of the committees that I served with him many a time were the Application Review Committee and the Continuing Ed Committee. And I don't think any psychologist got away with anything with Dr. Flowers on the board because he noticed everything, and he noticed all the things we missed as well.
So I always appreciated serving on committees with him. And the other thing, I don't know if you know, but Dr. Flowers has hollow legs. He can, I try to match him eating, except I gained 10 pounds and he lost 10 pounds. So I don't know how that happened, but those hollow legs. Dr. Flowers, we're going to miss you. And we appreciate your service to this board.
Yes. Dr. Flowers, do you have a few words you'd like to
Yes, I feel very grateful that I've been able to serve on the board. As a graduate student, the chairman of the department was on the psychology board in Utah, and I could not fathom being able to do it myself. And so when I had the opportunity, I was amazed. And you know, for that and many other reasons, I thought, well, I better definitely do some homework to prepare. I especially learned that early on when I felt ill prepared a couple of times and frankly kind of embarrassed. And so I thought, well, I can do something about it. It's called preparation. And it's been well worth it. I've also learned a huge amount about psychology. It's almost embarrassing to admit that because I've been certified licensed since 1979, before a lot of people were even born. And needless to say, psychology has changed tremendously in those years. And it's been a great experience. I've enjoyed working with all the board members, past and present, all the board staff. I had no idea what they did. Before I became a board member, I thought they just kind of yawned and collected a few papers here and there and issued licenses. I'm stunned whenever I see the notes from the meetings. It's amazing the job they do in organizing. And also, frankly, I'm very amazed and impressed with all the board members who have served, the depth of their background information. It's been amazing, and I'm feel very privileged that I've been able to work with the board, and I will greatly miss it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Flowers, and sincerely thank you for the time and your service on this board. I'd like to extend a warm welcome to our newly appointed public member who joins me as a public person on this board, and that's Ms. LaBoye. Ms. LaBoye, are you on with us today? I think she was going to maybe
join. Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Welcome. We're glad to have you. Would you like to do some brief introductions of yourself?
Sure, absolutely. Good morning, everyone. My name is Melanie LaBoye. I am an attorney in town. I practice criminal defense. I've been practicing for 17 years. I was a prosecutor with Maricopa County Attorney's Office for a while. And then after that, I became a defense attorney, and I've been doing that ever since. So I've been doing defense for about 15 years. I went to school at Marquette University, law school there as well in Wisconsin. I actually have a minor in psychology, so these issues, the area of psychology, has always been very interesting to me. As a defense attorney and as a prosecutor, we had a lot of interaction with psychologists in various arenas for things such as mental competency, dealing with, hiring doctors to evaluate our clients for mental health issues, dealing with a lot of clients who have addiction issues, whether it be drugs or alcohol, sending them to counselors. So I recognize the importance of having really good people practicing in this field. And I'm just very excited to be a part of this. And I have to say, I hope I can offer something today. There's a lot of materials to go through. I'm still kind of trying to navigate the portal and figure out how to look at the materials, but I was able to look at some of the things. So I'm hoping next time I'll be better prepared. So I just wanted to give everyone a heads up. And I also hope I can learn a lot today. So I'm just very excited, and it's nice to meet all of you.
Well, we're glad to have you, and we look forward to meeting you in person too, maybe
someday.
Yes,
I can't wait to be in person, right?
There you go.
All right, the next item on the agenda is board surveys. The board encourages everyone who attends today to provide feedback by completing a board assessment form. Please contact staff for a form survey. And also want to acknowledge our board staff. They do an incredible job of getting us prepared for these meetings. The work is endless. And of course, our esteemed attorney, Ms. Galvin, who keeps us going down the right track and keeps us briefed on all our legal and regulatory issues. But most important, I'd like to thank all of you on the board. Today's meeting is not unusual. There is hundreds and hundreds of pages to read, thousands. And I know a lot of you put just a lot of hours in, and thank you so much for that. It's truly appreciated. I'd like to now, item four on the agenda, call to the public. Those wishing to address the board do not need to read.
Ms. Shreve, we have one more new board member.
Did I miss that?
Dr. Katharina.
Oh, Dr. Katharina, are you on?
Yes.
Yes, I am.
Sorry, I totally missed that. So welcome.
Thank you. I actually am an observer today, and I don't take that over till next month, and that's
why you missed it.
Why you missed it.
Okay.
I was looking forward to being part of this group, and I see it as a tremendous challenge, and it's good to be among the top psychologists in the state as well as the top public members. So I can go over my life the next period, next time, or...
That would be
probably
great.
Have a lot to do today.
We'll put it on the agenda. It's not agendaized this time. So if we could, we'll definitely put that on so you can make a brief statement next time. But welcome. We're glad to have you. It's exciting
to
meet new board members.
Thanks, Ramona.
All right. And then a call to the public again. Anyone wishing to speak? Do not need to request permission. However, the board may limit those persons speaking during the time to a reasonable number of public comment on any public matter. In addition, each person wishing to address the board will be given 3 minutes or so to do so. Pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute 38.431.02H, the board can only take action on matters listed on the agenda. Is there anyone here that would like to make any statements under this agenda item? If so, just kind of wave and then we'd know to unmute you. All right, hearing none. Item 5, council update. Ms. Galvin, do you have an update for us?
A brief one, Madam Chairman. The case involves Dr. John Denbor, and he'd filed suit against the board challenging your interpretation and application of 32-2081C relating to court-appointed services and the effective date of that statute being July 1st, 2015. A complaint had been filed against Dr. Denbor for services he provided prior to 2015, but the complaint was filed after July 1st of 2015. He filed a special action in Superior Court. The Superior Court did find in favor of the board in its interpretation and application. He appealed that to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals again upheld the Superior Court ruling and found in favor of the board. He then asked the Supreme Court of Arizona to take jurisdiction and hear his appeal. And within the last couple of weeks, the Supreme Court declined to accept his case. And so the decision of the Court of Appeals stands and supports the board's interpretation and application of 32-2081C. The other case that you had in Superior Court and the Court of Appeals, I had briefed you on involving Dr. Gray. That has concluded. So that concludes my council report.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. All right, moving on to the next item, which is consent agendas. Is there anyone that needs to recuse from a consent agenda item? Would anyone like to remove an item and talk and deal with it separately? Hearing none, is there a motion to accept the consent agenda items?
So moved.
Oh, second.
All right, we got a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. The board may vote to go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38-431-03-A2 to review confidential records, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is confidential by state or federal law, and or ARS 38431.03A3 to receive confidential legal advice from our board's attorney. The time now is 8:07, and we're moving on to agenda item 7, which involves a complaint reviewed by the Committee of Behavioral Analysts and their recommendations to the board. Dr. Davis Wilson, would you provide a brief summary of complaint 2025, Robin Marion, for the board?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I also, my computer froze and I couldn't get to my mute button, but for the previous agenda item, I am recused from one of the behavior analyst applicants, Michael Reed, for the record. I could not get my computer to unfreeze to unmute, so I wanted to note that real quick for you, and then I will go ahead and give an overview of...
Let me ask one quick question, Ms. Galvin. Do we need to do anything different now that she's made that after we made the motion?
No, we'll just note that for the record. Michael Reed.
Michael Reed. Okay, perfect. All right, sorry, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. All right. Ms. Marion, complaint number 2025, I will provide an overview. We received a complaint from a speech therapist regarding concerns related to multidisciplinary treatment of clients that they... the complaint that they stated that they worked with mutually. The complainant alleges that Ms. Marion provided services outside of her ability to and approval to even work and bill through the insurance company. Also stated that the services provided contradicted the treatment that was being provided by both the speech therapist and the occupational therapist. The complaint alleges that Ms. Marion overstepped her boundaries by providing clinical guidance that did not align with the assessment or the treatment recommendations of the fellow therapist, and that Ms. Marion was involved in developing a plan of care for patients but did not follow through with attending the sessions as outlined in the plan of care. The licensee was represented by an attorney and provided a response in a timely fashion, stating that the role of Ms. Marion was not to provide treatment to patients, but rather to provide consultative support to clinicians as a director of an organization. They provided supplemental information upon the committee's request to review the consultation notes as well as records for the individual patients that were involved and were able to provide us with all of the documentation that the committee had requested regarding the matter. Additionally, Ms. Marion was able to provide us information related to her job duties at the clinic, where she was the clinic director, and she was instructed again to provide staff support, not patient care. The committee did review the information and noted some concerns related to possibly obtaining consent for her role on the team, as well as concerns related to behavior analyst ethical codes for providing consultation services and third-party involvement in services. After review and meeting with the committee concluded that they did not feel that any of the circumstances rose to a level of statutory concern, but that they wanted to encourage Ms. Marion to continue to engage in professional development specific to the scope of practice of working in a multidisciplinary team and in her role as a supervisor for the staff, noting specifically that some of the correspondence that was received and reviewed lacked professional demeanor and that there may not have been clear identification for all parties as to what her role specifically was. And so the committee is presenting to you today a recommendation to dismiss the complaint with a non-disciplinary letter of concern that outlines our concerns specific, again, just to the professional correspondence and to her making sure that in the future her role is clearly identified as to not kind of muddy those waters between the treating provider and staff support, because that appears to be something that, while it is an employee relation, we did note that there was documentation from a family that potentially that family was under the impression that they were receiving services from Ms. Marion as well, although the documentation that's been provided shows again that Ms. Marion was in a staff supervisory role for employee relations and not a treatment role. And that concludes my summary of the case.
Thank you very much. Is ST present? Is the complainant present, and would they like to speak? If you're on mute, just a reminder, take yourself off mute. Again, offering one more time. All right, it appears not. Dr. Marion, or Ms. Marion, are you present?
Yes, I am present.
And are you, I believe you also have counsel, Ms. Carvis?
Yes, yes, I'm present as well.
All right, if you could both introduce yourself, and I don't know if one of you or both of you want to say some opening statements.
Good morning, members of the board. This is Mandy Carvis of Wickersmith, and I'm counsel for Ms. Marion, who is also present this morning telephonically. Robin, would you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Robin Marion, and I'm here telephonically. And I appreciate the time that the board has taken to review this case.
I think in terms of any sort of statement, the summary that was provided was accurate. And the only other thing that I would reference, knowing that the board members have already reviewed the materials, is to be mindful of the source of the complaint, that being a former employee who we believe was disgruntled with her employment situation and unfortunately chose to take that frustration out on Ms. Marion. The only other thing of pertinence that I think is necessary to reference is that because of the concerns that Ms. Marion heard expressed by the members of the committee, she did undertake to voluntarily take several hours of continuing education in the areas of ethics and just multidisciplinary work. So she has heard the concerns and did take those very seriously. Some changes were made within the practice itself in terms of consent procedures. Unfortunately, due to COVID since this time, they have kind of transitioned to telehealth, and Ms. Marion has been furloughed, but they are working towards making some internal changes to ensure that such issues do not happen in the future. But as Ms. Marion said, we appreciate the time and attention that the board has taken with this, that the committee spent with this, and she certainly heard and will take their concerns to heart in future practice.
Great. Thank you for those comments. Board members, do you have any questions for Ms. Marion? All right, hearing none, then the board's going to move into deliberations. This is time for the board to discuss amongst themselves without interruptions from anyone else. Dr. Davis-Wilson, would you like to start the deliberations? And I believe your board already, or subcommittee had a recommendation already.
Madam Chair, members of the board, the committee did note that the applicant, or that the licensee, did provide us all of the additional documentation that we recommended. We initially had some concerns regarding the documentation of the role of consultation in the Behavior Analyst Ethics Code. Consultative work to clients defines clients as the actual employees or supervisees, which is why we had the deliberation that we did at the committee level as far as ensuring that there was proper consent and making sure that there was clear documentation of those roles, because it is something that is specified in our record. One of the things that the committee noted that I think is important is that being able to provide services in a multidisciplinary and interdisciplinary care is very important for many of the populations that we serve. And so the role that Ms. Marion has is one that is common for us to see in today's integrated care services. However, it's something that's newer for behavior analysts. And so we've more recently had ethics codes come about related to our ability to coordinate care with other professionals. And it's an area that the committee noted requires another level of expertise, but that based on the documentation that we received, and Ms. Carvis covered, you know, very important point of Ms. Marion has provided us additional documentation of procedures that she either has in place at the clinic or will be putting in place specific to ensuring that those roles are defined. That is why the committee has decided that, you know, at our level that we don't see it rising to the level of statutory concern, but that we wanted it to be noted and encourages Marion to continue to explore professional development in the specific area of providing services with a multidisciplinary team. And that we wanted it to be noted that, again, some of the correspondence, while it appears to be correspondence specific to employee relations and maybe some disgruntledness between employees, that it would still be an expectation that correspondence remain professional. And some of the email correspondence the committee felt did not maintain a level of professionalism to our standards of ethical conduct, but again, did not rise to the level of statutory complaint. And so we have drafted with the help of board staff a letter of concern for your review. And that is our current recommendation.
Are you making that a motion?
Happy to do so, yes. That is a motion.
All right.
This is Dr. Davey. I will go ahead and second. Yep, this is Dr. Davey. I'll second that motion.
Got a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Dr. Bob wants to make a comment.
Dr. Bob.
I certainly agree with our behavior analyst members and am certainly willing to go with their recommendation. However, we're entering into an era of integrated care. We have been confronted with these multidisciplinary, transdisciplinary, interdisciplinary approaches to treatment. But there's no training for doing such in either the behavior analyst curriculums or, in fact, in the psychology curriculums. So we train people to interact individually with patients and their families, but we don't train professionals to interact collaboratively, interdisciplinary, transdisciplinary fashions in the vast majority of the services we provide. The types of things that behavior analysts do that we've all recognized are critical to so many youngsters, especially managing within a family, within a school, and we can't do that as individual practitioners alone. We can't throw it on a piece of paper and hope it sticks to the wall someplace. We need to be taking a look at, of all the things we require, that people get some training, and there's two areas that are bugging me today, is we damn well have to look at training over video because so much stuff is happening now over these electronic means, and we damn well better start paying attention to training our people in collaborative and interdisciplinary care, or we're going to find more faux pas, more missed opportunities, and more people suffering from the lack of coordination of care. And I see this as a major issue.
Madam Chair, Dr. Bob, I completely agree with you, and I appreciate your comments on that. We did provide for Ms. Marion the recommendation to explore professional development specific to exactly that coordination of care. But I agree that it's a very large issue across both disciplines, both in behavior analysis and psychology. I'm also passionate about the topic, have requested at the association level that they take into consideration this particular or these types of topics when it comes to their annual conference. And so I believe that they have a keynote speaker that will be coming out talking about this, and they have developed a special interest group to continue to offer behavior analysts some continuing education remotely on an annual basis in this area. So I agree with you, and I will for sure continue to advocate that this is kind of its own scope of practice that requires additional training.
I'd make one additional kind of comment, and perhaps this is for the Rules Committee. As we move forward, I think some of the emergency measures the governor has put in place that make a lot of sense to me and have certainly changed the way we deliver services via electronic means. If this is going to continue and CMS is going to continue to allow this and the insurance companies are going to continue to allow this, we better keep in mind we have no rules, none whatsoever, that provide any guidance for our professionals in terms of what type of training that you need to have in terms of the ethics and safety precautions for providing services remotely over these types of Zoom and GoToMeeting and what have you venues. And we might want to take a serious look at this, because if we don't start regulating it, gosh knows what kind of sloppy practice we're going to see, and we can't excuse it just because it's electronic.
All right, thank you. Any other comments? All right, we have a motion and we have a second on the floor. All in favor, if you can unmute yourselves.
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We'll now move to Item 7B, complaint regarding Karina Nadol. Dr. Davis Wilson, would you like to provide a summary?
Yes, Madam Chair. Ms. Nadolo was seen before the committee with a complaint that came from a applicant. If you recall, in January of this year, we received an application for a behavior analyst licensee who notified the board that she was concerned about documentation that was provided by a supervisor, specifically noting that Ms. Ndolo did have a lapse in her license between September 1st to October 29th, 2018. For what she estimated to be about 260 hours worth of supervision that she felt was not provided to her. The committee reviewed the documentation and also had concerns that the hours were signed off on during that period in which Ms. Ndolo had had a lapse in licensure, and requested, after resolving the issue with the licensee, requested to open a complaint against Ms. Ndolo about the status of those supervision hours, specific to an affidavit that states that she did not practice behavior analysis from the period of September 1st to October 29th, 2018. Upon opening the complaint, the licensee did provide a response to the board in a timely fashion. It was noted that during the time in which the lapse of licensure occurred, the board was unable to reach the licensee despite sending 60, 30-day, and 15-day reminder emails, as well as certified letters that were both kicked back to the board. Ms. Ndolo's license was reinstated after she was in contact with the board and the board was able to get the affidavit stating that she did not provide services during that time. Since then, she has responded to the board in a timely fashion. She has provided the board with the supplemental information that has been requested, and we have reviewed both documentation from the licensee, the applicant, as well as a second supervisor that indicates that between the period of September 1 and October 29th, 2018, that supervision was actually put on hold for that particular licensee, and that the documentation did not reflect that, but that no services, no supervision was provided during that time. So the committee reviewed the information and noting that because supervision was not provided during that time, and that it was a clerical error in signing the period of supervised hours for which the licensee was employed, that we would be comfortable with a recommendation to dismiss the complaint, but also with a letter of concern specific to the documentation and the lack of clarification that supervision was not provided during that time. And that concludes my summary.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Dr. Nodal, are you present? And I believe you're represented by Mr. Akins. If you would both like to introduce yourselves and if you'd like to do an opening statement.
This is Dr. Farron Akins. I'm counsel for Ms. Nodola. I'll let her introduce herself.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Corinna Ndolo. I'd like to thank the board for this opportunity to address you and answer questions about the issues and the complaint that was opened against me.
It's a little bit hard to hear you, so you might need to speak up. You sound very distant.
Okay, is that any better?
A little bit. Do you have any opening comments? Dr. Akins, or?
Well, we both prepared things to be able to say to the board today, but I have to say that Dr. Davis-Wilson did such an excellent job of summarizing the pros and cons from the board, from the screening committee for the Committee of Behavior Analysts, and we're satisfied to accept the letter of concern that I think in the for the sake of efficiency, that we'll simply answer any questions that you may have and leave it at that.
All right, board members, do you have any questions?
Madam Chair, I do have one question for Ms. Ndolo, and this was asked at the committee, but I think it's important for the board to hear. What have you learned from your experience in from 2018 to what you have in place now that will prevent any type of clerical, or because this obviously is a concerning clerical issue, but what have you put into place from 2018 to now that will help you prevent this from happening again in the future, and what have you learned from this process?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you, just a little weak, but I okay. Can everybody hear? Okay.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to respond to that question. I had shared during the hearing committee that I definitely take this seriously and take seriously the licensure process. And this was a difficult lesson learned in making sure that I'm attending to my administrative tasks as much as I am attending to the people that we serve in our organization. And I think in this field, I get very excited about the opportunities that present themselves to serve our community, the parents that we serve and the students that we serve and our staff. But I need to spend an equal amount of time and give the time that it's due to my administrative tasks. So since this occurred, the main action I took that has allowed me to focus more fully on those administrative tasks was assigning a director of operations to our organization in August of 2019. So that allowed me to reduce my direct reports from 9 reports to 3 reports. I also decided to step back from providing supervision. So I'm not taking on any supervision clients for the 2020-2021 school year and potentially for subsequent years so that I can devote more energies to our the primary mission of our organization. And I've just also worked on considering my commitments and my goals and values for our organization and what I need to put down in order to more fully devote energy toward the mission of our organization.
Great, thank you. I do have a question. Not being licensed is serious. You know, you're basically, you're working without a license plus you're supervising. And how do you ensure that's not gonna occur again?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, one of the main ways I'm doing that currently is to not take on supervision students or clients. So I think I need to step back from some of the commitments that I had taken on. I think it's easy for me to get excited about all the interesting and exciting ways that we can serve as behavior analysts and to further this field. But I need to focus on what the mission of our organization is and what our my primary responsibilities are. So taking on supervision clients is something that I don't feel is prudent for me right now. But primarily before that, it would be ensuring that my license doesn't lapse. So like I said, I need to be devoting time to the administrative tasks that are equally important. I think it's, like I said, it's, I love the work of serving our community, of serving people, but the paperwork, the responding to emails in a timely fashion, responding to my license, those things are equally important. And it's a matter of carving out time each day to spend on those tasks rather than going from one meeting to another meeting and never sitting down to actually tackle the to-do list and the tasks at hand.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the board?
Ms. Shreve, Madam Chair, I have just one more question for a point of clarification for Ms. Endolo. Can you describe for us what your role is? Because I think that's where, to Ms. Shreve's question, where the confusion may be as far as licensure, and describe a little bit about your organization and your role, because in addition to not taking on supervision, you also, you can correct me, but you also don't see clients individually either.
Sure. Yeah. I don't, my role has changed and changes every year. And so I think that's, you know, I think that's true for a lot of behavior analysts, especially founders. But I currently serve as the executive director for St. Dominic Savio Academy and Next Step. I founded the organization in 2009, and we currently serve 30 children with autism and their families from birth to age 22. We have both an early intervention clinic and a K-12 academy. So as the executive director, I am overseeing both our early intervention clinic and our school. I'm also a certified special education teacher. So that was my role prior to becoming a behavior analyst. But my role is much more in the growth and development of our organization, in overseeing our development, overseeing finance, overseeing our academy and our clinic. So my role is much more business and administrative. I don't write any behavior intervention plans. I oversee our behavior analytic team and I oversee our operations, but I don't provide any direct treatment at this time.
All right, thank you. Are there any other questions from the board members? All right, hearing none, thank you, Dr. Nadolo and Dr. Akins for being here. This the board's now going to move into deliberations. This is a time for the board to talk amongst ourselves without interruptions. Dr. Davis-Wilson, as the lead, would you like to start the discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair. As noted in the committee overview, it was the committee that moved to open the complaint, as we did see concerns with both possibly practicing without a license, as well as the concerns with the lack of correspondence with the board. During the review of the complaint and having the opportunity to review documentation and again review both from the licensee and an additional witness who was a licensed behavior analyst at the organization providing services, it was concluded that there was a period of time that the licensee actually opted to put supervision on hold, and therefore we couldn't come to the conclusion that supervision was actually unlawfully provided. Our concern was specific to then the documentation and the clerical issue and the lack thereof of clarification for that portion of the supervision period as to the documentation not saying, hey, during this time supervision wasn't provided, but instead covering a span of time that included a time in which supervision was put on hold. The board did also note the committee did also note again the concerns specific to the response time and the complete lack of correspondence between the licensee and board staff during 2018. But during the committee review, Ms. Ndola was able to provide for us kind of an overview of the self-reflection that she's done. And we see that her correspondence with the board today and what has happened over what has transpired over the last 6 months has been adequate and has shown us that that mechanisms have been put into place to allow for her to adequately do that. So with that in mind, we are, unable to conclude that there was a violation at a statutory level. However, we are concerned with, again, the documentation not being clear. And I would motion that we dismiss the complaint with a letter of concern that outlines our concerns related to the supervision documentation, as well as the correspondence from 2018 with the board.
So just to confirm, Dr. Davis-Wilson, it's your conclusion that there was not any violation of any statutory rule?
Correct. And that came from, there was a second licensed supervisor who clarified that for the period of September 1st through October 29th, that particular licensee did opt to put supervision on hold. We were unable to verify that then services were provided to the supervision because the supervision was put on hold during that time. Ms. Ndola, knowing that she was having a gap in her licensure, did work with the licensed behavior analyst in her organization to then provide the supervision. However, this particular licensee opted to wait until Ms. Ndola was licensed and able to resume supervision.
All right, because I would have my only concern is I wouldn't want to give a letter of concern if there's any violation. So, all right, thanks for clarifying that. I appreciate that. Any other comments or discussion from board members?
I would second the motion made by Dr. Wilson.
Well, that was a motion, right, Dr. Wilson?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. I have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, remember to unmute yourself.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. I'm Dr. Ndola and Dr. Akins, thank you for joining us today.
Our pleasure. Thank you very much for the thoughtful discussion.
All right. We're now going to move to item number 8 on the agenda, complaint number 2027, Dr. Galper. Dr. Myers, you're the lead. Would you like to provide a summary of this case?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I wonder if we could do a very brief comfort break before we proceed.
You bet. Let's take a comfort break. So I have it's 8:45. Would 10 minutes sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. So 5 to the hour, we'll rejoin. So if you want to just put your Zoom on mute, and we will be back.
This is Ms. Poe with the board office. I have muted all participants, so board members will need to unmute themselves as needed.
Okay. I believe, Dr. Davis-Wilson, are you back?
I am.
Okay, perfect. I just didn't see you. There you are. All right. Let's go ahead and move. I need to just step one little step back, though.
This item, item number 8 is a timed item, so it is 8:57. We're going into discussion, consideration of possible action regarding initial case reviews. I want to remind the members that the purpose of the initial review is to determine whether there may be a violation of a rule or statute. The board's not conducting an informal interview today. We may go into executive session on any items pursuant to ARS 3840.31.03A2 to review confidential records, or 3840.31.03A3 to review legal confidential advice from our attorney. Individuals wish to speak must complete a speaker request form and provide it to the board staff, or I will or let me know on the Zoom meeting, and we're very flexible. The complaint is complaint 2027 is our first one. So this is item 8A, Dr. Galbert. Dr. Myers, you're the lead. Would you like to provide a summary, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Galper provided individual and group therapy to the complainant between May 2018 and December 2019. HB was a private pay client, and approximately 2 weeks after her last session, she submitted a complaint alleging several unethical issues, including disclosing confidential information without authorization or release, consuming alcohol during a session, boundary violations, record-keeping issues, and unprofessionalism. and then, so the alcohol use was her first major concern, that it was that Dr. Galper met the client for the session with an alcoholic beverage, as well as information about others was shared during sessions, and additional concerns about billing, and there were missing texts and records from the complaint screening committee. Additional information was received from the complainant in response. Noted that, pointed out additional problematic documentation issues, such as discrepancies between written and typed progress notes that did not contain the same amount of information. Concerns about, again, the drinking, and then the inability to access her full set of records. An additional boundary violation was identified as Dr. Galper asked HB, who was going to be working as part of her education with another healthcare provider, and Dr. Galper was asking for professional recommendations on referrals, and there seemed to be a boundary crossed between being a client and being a peer in behavioral health. And then another concern was about consent forms and the use of coaching calls and text messages without a consent for telepractice. Dr. Galper has responded through two different attorneys, and since the previous meeting provided additional records that she reports she did provide to her initial attorney, but did not submit those. Through a second attorney, she did provide additional text messages and documentation. She alleged that she did not drink during a session, that on her way to answer the door, she did grab a seltzer water that was alcoholic by mistake, and that she did not drink it. And again, her secondary response did provide additional information and documentation, and also noted that there were some record keeping errors sessions were billed as group therapy by her administrative assistant instead of as additional therapy. And she provided documentation from the administrative staff person that this was a mistake. And as stated previously, supplemental information did provide additional billing records and text message correspondence. And the complaint screening committee identified possible inappropriate text communications with the client, blaming the client and expressing unprofessional boundaries, as well as concerns about consent for treatment. This claim was forwarded to the board for possible violations of ARS 32-2061H, failing or refusing to maintain and retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to psychological services, ARS 32-2061-16-0, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice, and ARS 32-2061-16-DD, violating an ethical standard adopted by the board as it pertains to sections 3.04, avoiding harm, and 3.10, informed consent of the American Psychological Association's ethical principles. And that concludes my summary.
Thank you, Dr. Meyer. Dr. Galbert, I believe you are on, and then also I believe you're represented today by Mr. Derrickson?
David Derrickson.
Sorry.
Madam Chair, I do believe the complainant HB is participating as well.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to actually step back for a moment. Thank you. HB, thank you for being here today. We appreciate your attendance. Would you like to say a few words to the board, and then the board may have some questions for you?
Yes, thank you. Madam Chair, members of the board, thank you for offering space and consideration to this matter. And thank you, Dr. Meyer, for that summary. After Dr. Galper's behavior and what was unveiled about her defense at the CSC, it's hard for me to be here today, so I have prepared a statement. To learn that Dr. Galper was continuing to behave in the ways I described in the complaint, crafting a presentation of my character in order to blame me for her choices was difficult. She performed wholly dishonest renditions of events, insulated by her choice to withhold evidence that showed otherwise. It was like the clinical relationship all over again. And while lying to me directly was a painful betrayal, in some ways it was validating that she lied to the committee as well, because you experienced it too. So I can't imagine I'm the only one who's done it too. I need to address the diagnosis in the complaint. During the committee meeting, it was mentioned that one needs to be competent with the population. Her use of that diagnosis as part of her defense makes it clear that she lacks the needed compassion for that demographic. But if you only restricted her practice with that population, it would leave people like me vulnerable. It was clear that the committee members took pause at Dr. Galper's November text. They were distressing, and I spent a lot of time crying, questioning what I know about myself, and reading as much as I could about who she told me I was in those messages. Eventually, I came home to myself and it wasn't right. But what if I actually had the diagnosis she presented to you in her defense, the one marked with things I've never experienced, like self-harm and suicidality? what if I couldn't lean into the nurturing and longstanding relationships in my life or rely on my body and mind coming back to my consistent emotional baseline and strong sense of self now? What if I were prone to irrational anger or dangerous impulsivity? Sending those texts to me was inappropriate and harmful, and I don't want the board to lose sight of that. But it concerns me that she has the access and authority to do this to patients who really do have that clinical presentation. That population is already at higher risk for mortality due to their symptoms of suicidality and other high-risk behavior. Dr. Galper told me that she was using a DBT-informed approach to treat the concerns I came in with regarding eating behaviors and improving my health, which fits with the only treatment plan in the file. One of the ways I cope is by learning, so taking a deep dive into DBT has been helping me move through the aftermath of this experience. What I learned is that dialectics are meant to increase openness, not attack a client's insight and emerging self-trust. Irreverence is an approach meant to bring change and deepen rapport through genuineness, not an excuse for clinician cruelty. And therapist self-disclosure is meant to normalize experiences and model solutions, not center a clinician's life and issues over a client's care. I won't repeat her stories in a public meeting since it could be harmful, and I don't know why she shared so much. The personalness of it all, along with other inappropriate behavior, left me feeling guilty, like I was betraying someone who saw me as more than a client when I made the report. That, paired with the other gestures of intimacy and of aggression, left me with a really conflicted blend of loyalty, bewilderment, and hurt. While I am in a related career, I'm not here today in that capacity. I'm a patient who had a need and sought treatment, but instead found quite the opposite. The harmful engagement with Dr. Galper continues to require ongoing support, even 8 months after leaving. The sampling of records she did provide, which Rheta's crafted to defend the complaint, are of no clinical value. I sit with thousands of dollars in debt and fees to Dr. Galper, and when I look at my balance, I'm reminded that she's still out there practicing with clients who have no idea the danger they're in. I replay it in my head, wondering how I could have gotten out earlier and can't imagine how. She denied me referrals, and she'd used her clinical authority to center the problem within me and talk about how staying and continuing to work with her was the only right choice, while walking away was wrong and a testament to my pathology, my weak distress tolerance, another term from DBT that she used inappropriately, but enough about that. Some of you have witnessed her escalation, scapegoating, and lack of remorse. I imagine that if I were in your shoes, I would need to know some things to determine if and how she can practice safely. If her regret goes beyond the fact that she got caught, if she's able to name the ways her behavior harmed me, and if any feelings come up for her when she sits with the harm that she caused, I would want to know why she made these choices and what confounding factors made her turn away from the very tools she said she loves to teach and credits for her own past healing, why tending her immediate urges is more important, it seems, than reverence for the profession and the power she holds as a licensee and client's well-being. I would want to know if she's able to restrain her impulsivity in any area of her life and whether she could have with me and chose not to, or whether self-control is simply that speech. But then I don't know if you could even expect honesty in response. Thank you for your time today and for your service to our state, and I'm available for questions.
HB, thank you for your comments. Board members, do you have any questions for HB?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Dr. Gill.
This is Dr. Gill. I'd like to express my appreciation for HB being here today and expressing the concerns that she's focused on here. I have questions about the confidentiality issue. You had alleged that Dr. Galpert had spoken about third parties, including maybe members of a group that she was seeing, that you also knew these individuals. And I wonder, could you comment on the allegations of violations of confidentiality in your treatment with her?
When she told me about other people who weren't in the room, just to clarify, is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Yeah. There was a lot, and I hesitate to talk about clients because I...
Well, you can just mention, an individual or initials, or you could be as vague as you can.
If you can, initials are great. We don't want to use names.
Okay. So I guess I'll start with professionals. She mentioned a former boss was especially harsh, mentioned that person by name, mentioned a client of hers having a diagnosis, the one that she had said in the text. She mentioned the some really unkind things about the dietitian who used to rent space from her. And then as far as clients, she made some comments about a client who she deemed as particularly attractive woman who her husband, I guess the woman's husband in Dr. Galfer's view was not as attractive. Then there was another client who I had referred, who she referred to as a rager. And then there was another one who was younger, like substantially younger than me, who she was talking about the person having a toxic mother, and just stuff like that. So there was also something, there was a, I don't want to say her name either, but there was another therapist in Maryland who she talked about. I think it was either in group or directly with me. There was a client who, I guess there was a situation with a client having a lot of alimony and was like incredibly needy, and she went on and so forth like that. So.
Okay. Thank you. And could you also comment on what understanding you had about texting her? There was an allegation that there was no initial informed consent regarding the boundaries around texting between the two of you. And could you comment on that, on what your understanding was of the texting that went on between you and why it apparently stopped at a certain point?
Sorry, when did it stop? I'm
not sure when it stopped, but during your therapy, I believe she said that we're no longer going to text with each other.
I don't have a recollection of that event, Dr. Gibbons.
Well, okay. Then how about just talking about your understanding of the texting arrangement between you? Did she charge for the texting? Was there a limit to how many texts you could rendered
okay, sure.
Toward her?
Yeah, so way at the onset of treatment, before I had signed any forms, she left me a voicemail encouraging me to text her whenever. And then after the forms and things, which I understood the forms to be logistical in nature, there was a point where she suggested that I was over-controlled, I think was the term she used, and suggested that I guess I can talk about a symptom, but not the diagnosis, I think. Instead of like, you know, turning to food and like being very controlled about everything, she encouraged me to text her for skills coaching, and also to share about various other things going on in life, to dialogue about it so that I wouldn't be like eating over those things. I'll just leave it at that. But as far as the text, we didn't really talk about whether I should text or things like that in session. Sometimes she would say, hey, let me know how such and such goes, or you can always text me. But I was just going by the feedback that I was getting from the texts themselves, which I guess maybe you now have a copy of. But, I think it would be logical that if things are responded to, that's a positive reinforcement. And if things are not, then that's not. And I follow directions. I'm pretty yielding of a person. So does that answer your question?
Well, I just wanted to know if there was a plan or something that you were an intervention that you were consenting to regarding an exchange on texting, whether there was a limit to it, how often you could do it. Whether there was it could only be 5 or 10 minutes. Did she charge for the texting?
I agree. It was all very vague. I've never texted with a prior therapist. I don't text with my current therapist. At work, I just scheduling, and then some tech stuff as after COVID, with my clients, just making sure people get on the portal or whatever. But there was no structure to it, so I don't know. I can't really answer that, I guess.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's all I have.
Thank you, Dr. Gill.
Thank you, HB. Any other questions for HB? All right. Thank you, HB, for being with us. We do appreciate it. We're going to now move to Dr. Galper, and I believe her attorney is with us. If you could both introduce yourselves, and if you either one or both have an opening comment, and then we may have questions for you.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the board, my name is David Derrickson. Thank you for this opportunity.
No.
I'm going to have a volume issue.
Are you on the phone? Are you using your phone and the computer, Mike?
I'm using the phone. The computer. Is your computer on?
My computer is turned off.
Can you mute yours? I apologize.
No problem.
This is a difficult way to practice law.
I think we're all learning how to use a computer system. So it sounds like you have maybe a phone and your computer mic going on at the same time.
I have two computers, and one of them is now turned off, and I think that this will work.
That's better.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. A couple of things. First of all, Dr. Gill, to respond very briefly and quickly to the issue about the informed consent. If you've seen the materials that were filed last week, admit that there was a violation of the informed consent form that 310 contemplates. There were no charges that were ever made for texting between Dr. Gilbert and HB. So that issue. With respect to confidentiality, there are a number of issues that were raised in comments by HB that I don't think were raised in the initial complaint or the second complaint, and in any event, not forwarded for consideration by this board. And I wanted to address the issues that are forwarded to the board. The issue involving failing or refusing to maintain and retain adequate records, this is very bothersome to me as an attorney, because Dr. Galper supplied, through Samantha Becerra, who was present, all of the records that her lawyer needed to provide to this board, all of the emails and the text messages that should have been presented back in March. She provided in early February. She provided them again in early March. Exhibit number 2 shows the documentation of her sending the information to her lawyer. But apparently the lawyer never provided it to the board. And when the board met on May 13th, she was distressed. Dr. Galper was distressed to find out that the board didn't have that information, and HB didn't have that information. And it certainly is no question in my mind that HB and the board questioned the competency of Dr. Galper in failing to present that information. We presented it within a week of that board meeting when I was hired to represent Dr. Galper going forward. I can understand how HB would feel about that. It should be noted that HB stated in her original complaint I like Lisa and have her to thank for teaching me about behaviorism, shame, acceptance, walking through distress, and holding space for paradox in life and relationships. Perhaps bittersweetly, much of what she has taught me and how interactions with her have changed me are why I've been able to navigate some of the following concerning experiences that she now speaks about. And I can understand, and I think Dr. Galper understands, that HB certainly had her suspicions heightened when she could not see from Dr. Galper the same text messages that she had. So we're apologizing for that. It is inexcusable. It should not be held against Dr. Galper. Respect to informed consent, I've spoken about that, and I provided information that I think mitigates that issue. HB knows how those records or any of those texts can be used and accessed outside of the therapeutic relationship because of the danger of electronic information. And we understand that. And that is why we presented to you the kind of telemedicine consent form that is now used by Dr. Galper. With respect to unnecessary, unsafe, or otherwise unprofessional practices, we presented evidence that establishes, and any hearing would establish, that dialectic behavioral therapy is a very appropriate method of therapy for persons who are suffering the same sort of behavioral dysfunctions that, or dysregulations, that is, as HB. It's a necessary, and it was a safe practice in this particular case. The issue that I think was focused in on by the board had to do with what Dr. Galper admits are unprofessional texts that were made in November, December of 2019 that led to this complaint. And it is a very, very sad situation that happened. She admits that she did not, Dr. Galper did not set forth the proper boundary that would permit the two of them to have texted in a more professional way. And she made some statements that she regrets, and she has made she's given you a long written statement about her feelings about this. And so that is something the board has to consider, obviously, today. The last issue has to do with 304, and that has to do with preventing conduct that could cause harm. We recognize that the tenor, the tone that was presented in the responses would cause HB to be confused and concerned and anxious about the kind of therapy that Dr. Galper gave her. We recognize that. And again, this has been a horribly learning experience for Dr. Galper. Dr. Galper's been a therapist for 27 years. She's been a psychologist for 21 years. She's never had a complaint. She's not even had an informal complaint. So when she had a particular complaint, she hired an attorney. She expected the attorney to be able to properly represent her and present her case. Now, she's responsible for what that lawyer said. And we understand that. And we recognize that what that response may have caused to HB is concern and anxiety. And so we ask you to take those into account. The records in this case, which we stand behind, the written notes, the soap notes, and the text. The records in the case demonstrate that the therapeutic program that was provided was reasonable and necessary and given in a safe and appropriate manner. EBT with skills coaching was and is an excellent method of therapy for persons like HB who have had a difficulty in regulating emotions. She's a highly respected member of her profession, and we presented 17 or 16 letters to support that. She is a person who ought not to lose her license over anomalous behavior in a difficult relationship. I'm going to ask you to take into account her acceptance of responsibility and her hope that HB will use the skills that she learned in therapy going forward. HB's many texts and statements that thanked Dr. Galper show that the therapy was highly useful in her ability to process emotions. So I'm asking that the board not take her license or suspend her license or restrict her from practicing in the near future, that if the board considers that she needs education, that she hasn't already taken between the time this complaint was filed and today, that she will happily do that. Dr. Galper is here to answer questions, and I'm here to answer questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you for those comments. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Galper?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes, Dr. Flowers.
Yes, I have several questions for her. In your response to the complaint, you said that her diagnosis explained a lot of her complaint. And reviewing the documentation of the sessions and treatment, I didn't see that diagnosis or any other diagnosis provided for the client. Can you explain this?
Certainly. Mute.
You have two devices turned on? Because if you have a computer and a phone, you get the background.
Okay. You got me? Okay. In treating this client, was a person with a history of abuse, traumatic invalidation, and emotional dysregulation that was related a lot to her feeling unsafe in the world because a lot of people had hurt her in her family, in her life. I didn't really even think about, here's this diagnosis of whatever, the diagnosis. I really thought about the behavior and the experience of emotion dysregulation and shame and things like that. And and I use DBT for people who have emotional dysregulation. Unfortunately, and this is a horrible disservice to you, the client. I'm really glad that she's here today. And myself, I've never been to any kind of legal thing or done any legal proceedings. And the attorney, I had gone to an attorney that wasn't through my insurance. He suggested you diagnosis like that. It's deceitful. I went to my liability insurance company and I said, do you have an attorney who knows how to work with, the psychology? And they said, yes, this guy is great. So then I took him on and he said, this is what you need to do. Now, can I look back now and say, oh my gosh, why in the world would anyone present this way? Yes, because it's anti-DBT. DBT is about non-judgment. It's about being behaviorally descriptive. So we don't really even talk about diagnoses in DBT. We really talk about behaviors. And I wish that I would have been able to think straight at the time that I hired him to couch it in constructive terms and behaviorally descriptive terms. I really do. I when I got this complaint, it was so shocking because our relationship was good until it was strained near the end. And I hope you know that complaint, that I care about you, and that the diagnosis piece was not on my radar around using DBT.
Okay. Also, this goes back to record keeping and that those kind of issues. I didn't really see mental status exams in the notes, and I didn't see anything about checking for the presence of risk factors for self-harm or harm to others. Is that something that you do in your clinical care?
Yes, that's in the intake paperwork that you might not have seen that the client filled out.
Well, I guess that can be then, but once you start giving services, you don't check again?
Absolutely. The client asked me if I thought she had BPD, and she very specifically, we talked about, here's the emotional dysregulation piece. Here's the part where it's hard to take in information that she felt was disconfirming, certain things like that. And then she talked about, well, I don't think I'm BPD because I am not self-harming. I do not have suicidal ideation. And we talked about that. And I agree. She never did have suicidal ideation or self-harming, which is why I chose DBT-informed treatment versus a DBT standard protocol, which is used for people who have suicidal ideation and suicide history gestures.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other questions for Dr. Galper?
This is Dr. Meyer.
Dr. Meyer, please go ahead.
Dr. Galper, thank you for the second set of records and information that you provided. We did not receive a treatment plan that I can find. It seems like records are missing, or if they're not missing, if we have everything, that there's a lack of standard of care. Could you address the clinical record?
Yes, and I've reviewed the clinical record multiple times. I spent months reviewing this material, not sleeping, feeling sick. I want the person to know this.
Okay, just a second, please. Could you have your attorney mute his?
Can you help?
We're getting feedback. Thank you, Dr.
Yeah. Sorry, I need help here. Okay, is it better? That's better, right?
Yes, thank you.
When I was trained, unfortunately, I was trained in 1990 in psychoanalytic and psychodynamic therapy, where at the time I was trained, the way that people did what is now called treatment plans didn't look like it does now. And I acknowledge that, so my treatment plan looked more like, here are the client's goals, here's the problem, here's the type of treatment I would use, interpersonal, DBT informed, things like that. And that for sure, since I started in this last year or so getting into more behavioral treatments, have learned about this is how treatment plans look. I've not accepted insurance ever, so I've never been asked for a treatment plan. So I agree. I also purchased 3 books about treatment planning, and I have been using them now because this is stuff that I needed to learn. This happened for a good reason in my mind. I did need to learn this. I was trained psychodynamically 30 years ago, and stuff changed, and I should keep up, and I should have. It's true. In terms of record keeping, when I looked at my records, and I'm glad this happened, because when I looked at my records, the records between like the end of May and up until about October, November, end of May 2018 till October, November of 2019 looked good to me. Like I did not see problems. I saw what was happening in my estimation of what was going on in the sessions, which was that, yes, this client came to me, was very vulnerable. I was aware of that. We spent a ton of time focused on validation and me trying to figure out the right language so she would feel comfortable and validated. It was very, very hard, and understandably, she has been wounded, right? But I don't think the records were problematic when I looked at them. There was a missing note from the 21st of June that the client brought up, and so I didn't even know that until the client brought it up, so thank you. And then I went to my old assistant, Andy Schweikert, and said, why is that note not in the file? And he said, oh, I have an app called Dr. Prono. It's an EHR app on which I would write my psychotherapy notes. And then he would print the psychotherapy notes, so I would do my typing. And he said, oh, yes, there were three notes that got deleted. And he called Dr. Prono, and he could not retrieve them. That's what happened with that. As far as I know, Andy made a statement. I'm not going to lie. This is what happened. I couldn't make up a note now, like, you know. So I understand what you're saying. Yeah, in that case, the record was weird. I agree.
Okay, thank you. The other main concern I had was what last time you talked about as being irreverent as a part of the DBT approach. In some of your responses over text message to HB, especially around the Chicago trip and aspects of that. The use of irreverence therapeutically is not at all how I would understand the interactions. Could you address those, the tones and the content of those text messages?
So irreverence wasn't used in most of the text messages. That was specifically just in December. But I'll just say that in the December 15th, so I think I need to back up. In October of 2019, when the client at some point it was my fault. She started to be a little bit forceful with me in a way that I let myself get intimidated. And she said, I'm coming to your house at 8 a.m. to get my get the keys to your office because my phone is there. And I said, listen, I'll be there tomorrow at 11:45. You could get, use maybe your mother's phone or your friend's phone. And she said, no, I'm coming. And that's it. I'm coming. I'll be there at 8 a.m. I really need my phone. That was the first time I ever experienced the client in a way that I lost my own, my objectivity. I thought, oh my gosh, what am I supposed to do? I can't stop someone. And that was the point at which the relationship changed. And I started to feel intimidated. And this is my fault. I felt intimidated. What happened after that, because I looked at the texts from the entire treatment, those texts were totally in alignment with DBT phone coaching texts. They were not inappropriate. They were not too frequent. The text messages changed around October, and that was my fault. I felt afraid that, like, I couldn't give her what she wanted. Right. Mm. And I was not aware enough. Right. This is no doubt. I was not aware enough. And so I did reinforce, which I'm really glad she did learn about intermittent reinforcement. I did intermittently reinforce her texting me a lot in those last months. And I think it's because she was saying good things and positive things about herself. And that was something that she had a hard time with in sessions. And so, yeah, I reinforced that. That was my mistake. So by November 11th, when I was saying, please stop texting, she's right. I understand why she would have been hurt, confused. And yeah, I've never used text before ever with a client. I am never going to do it again. It is the most not good way for me as a person to do any kind of coaching. I've always done it through the phone. Phone is so much easier for me. And I felt terrible. And then I apologized to her after the November text. That wasn't irreverence. That was me being snapping, like, stop. That was my fault. I felt terrible. I wish I could take it back. I have played this out 1,000 times, right? And then in December, you know, so the feeling at that point in November, I consult all the time with my DBT group. I have a separate person I pay for consultation. And I said, do I need to stop working with this person? I really like her. We have had problems in the past, including in June, where she did amazing work at being able to experience a conflict between us and letting me solve it with her, letting us heal together. And that happened in February. If you look at the case notes, there was a time in February where she got very angry with me for accidentally misgendering someone. That was a great lesson for me. I didn't know. Now I know. In June, she wrote a text that said, thank you for helping me break the most painful cycle of my life. That was the way that our relationship went. It was mostly good. And then when there was a conflict, it was pretty significant. And I wanted very much to help her see me as someone who doesn't need to like see her negatively. So those texts and the text at the end, yeah, I really was like, man, I wish I would have stopped treatment before December 15th. But at December 10th is when the decision to stop treatment came. And I thought, okay, it's the end of the year. This is good. And on the December 15th text, that was really, again, going back to my own counter transference where I just was feeling in that last month of therapy, like I couldn't, like everything was like, I couldn't do anything right. I worked so hard to be validating. And I know that this client did so well and navigated so many things well, including her internships, which were hard. And she was willing to go and stand up for herself and advocate for herself. She advocated for herself with her mother, her friends. So honestly, yes, that was horrible. The text in November, I can't even look at it. It's so horrible.
Okay. Thank you. The final question I have is about, the kind of different boundaries between HBB and a client versus talking about referrals to where she would be as an intern or practicum. I wasn't sure what that is her description in the more recent submissions accurate about those requests to provide referrals?
You'll see it in the text. If you look in the text, I knew she was interning at a place that had a lot of therapists who do marriage counseling, and I don't do marriage counseling. So I said, is there anyone there who's like really, really highly trained and great at marriage counseling? Because she would know the people. That's all I asked in the text. I didn't say you have to give me an answer. And then she provided me with a multitude of answers and responses, which I guess erroneously took to mean that she was happy to provide me with that information. I guess that's my mistake. I did not intend it to be, oh, you know, you have to like tell me because I don't know who to refer to. I can ask lots of people. That in a way, sometimes when I would do something to help her see that I trusted her and I thought well of her, it backfired on me. That was like an example, right? It's like, oh, is there someone great? I want her to feel good about me asking the question. That was a problem. That was my mistake. I'm sorry. I am very sorry that she felt harmed by that question. Sorry.
Thank you. That's all I had. I appreciate the change in tone and focus from last time.
I appreciate you giving me an opportunity because I have been in the worst experience of my life for this whole 6 months of this year. And I would give anything to be able to turn back time, not have used that attorney. I really, I want the client to be able to move forward in her life well. And you, she knows so many great things. That's, anyway.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from our
Madam Chairman?
Yes, Dr. Bohansky.
Yes, I have a couple questions, I guess. Many of us are what are probably appropriately referred to as graybeards. We were trained 20, 30 plus years ago. However, training and professional license practice often have some real gaps, which is why when you get licensed, especially here in Arizona, we have a set of rules. We have a set of rules that we're all supposed to follow. And those rules encompass a set of ethics decided upon by our professional association or our trade group that essentially says this is the standard of care that we all follow. And that standard of care may be different than what we were initially trained in the various programs we were in. Now, being kind of focused on basics, if our standard of care clearly defines what a service plan or treatment plan is, and we have a responsibility to stay informed about our rules and statutes, and furthermore, we have a responsibility to do continuing education. And if we've been in practice for more than 25 years, we've gone through a dozen cycles of continuing education requirements that have essentially laid out the opportunity for us to keep up with the current standards of writing a service plan that's designed to meet the needs of a client as opposed to the concept of a diagnosis. But that's lacking in treatment. That's a huge gap. And I become fearful not just for HB, who had the courage to come forward and say something's missing here, but how many other patients in your practice do not have a service plan that matches the requirements or standards of care which have been established by our colleagues to protect us and protect our patients in the application of DBT or EMDR or CBT or whatever the hell popular letters there are today. And when that's not there, when your colleagues can review at length records, even though they were not timely in coming, but have spent the time to review them, it leaves substantial question in us as to what the safety and appropriate professionalism is there. So that's the first part for me, and I guess the hidden question in that is, do you have service plans for your other clients? But I'm going to tag that with the other basic question, and it follows after Dr. Flowers' comments, and I dearly respect Dr. Flowers' incredible review of records, and I was so disappointed in your response to him, that a client filling out a few questions does not an assessment make. A client filling out background information, a client filling out basic things which we need in terms of some personal history or what have you, is not an assessment. A risk assessment, a mental status exam are the two things that I go for in any forensic case or any review case that I'm making to say, did this psychologist know how to take that background information and combined it with the interview information and combined it with their impressions of this client to formulate a summary and conclusion, a mental status exam that helps give us a start and a place to measure, because when we see that client again or again or again or 6 months later, that we do that exercise and look for the improvements or the deterioration that may have occurred. None of that seems to be present in the records that I reviewed. It seems to be assumed that that kind of thing occurred. And God forbid something happened to you, doctor, and somebody else had to pick up that case, that there was no way to follow A to B to C. Mm-hmm. So I'm concerned about your records, and I guess the underlying question in all of this is, does the sum of your practice look similar in terms of lack of mental status, lack of risk assessment, lack of reassessment on an ongoing basis, and lack of appropriate service planning targeted at the needs of the client, mm-hmm. as opposed to the diagnosis?
Do you want me to can I respond?
Please, I'm known for getting off on rants, and I apologize, but the gist is there. What my concern is.
Yes. So I am by nature a copious note writer in handwriting, and I have worked with trauma and people with dissociative identity disorder, et cetera, for many years. 1994 is the first client I saw who was at that time called MPD. I am very, very careful. In DBT, we have something called the LRAMP, which is a suicide assessment, et cetera. I am very careful to make sure that I have the information that I need, mental status information, functioning information. Is this person doing anything in their lives to manage that could be dangerous, et cetera? And I also agree that when I look at my early notes, I feel like I wrote every single word she said, and I asked every question I could think of. And is everything there that I've been in writing? I guess not, right? I am incredibly thorough. If you look at the reviews of people who have known me, I'm a very thorough, highly detail-oriented person, like the complainant. And I really am working with people who are struggling. I don't take that for granted. So I hear what you're saying. And in this last year, I actually have worked with my DBT team, who have been trained in treatment planning and all of that, to create better treatment plans. I did ask one of my co-intern from 1995, who is the training director for psychology, clinical training director at University of Puget Sound. I did go through some of my treatment plans with her. I said, Cherie, I need you to help me, because I want to make sure that I know that I'm doing this. Since this happened, this has been like the best training ever. I wish I could learn without making mistakes. But I have also been very actively pursuing CEUs for years. I am not a person who is opposed to learning. I have been getting as many trainings as I can. The fact that I don't know everything, you're right. I need to keep up better. I agree. I am happy to. And so, no, my treatment plans now are according to all the things I've read, the books I have, the people I've consulted. I've been doing this really since before this complaint came in.
And training is wonderful. I certainly agree with that. My concern is that your treatment plans match our rules.
I agree.
Because everybody else out there has got an opinion about what it ought to look like, but we're trying to match the standard of care as written in the Arizona rules, and that's what I'm looking for from your treatment plans.
Right. I agree. And that is what I've been working on with my DBT team, with my friend who's the University of Puget Sound person who knows all the psychologist rules. And I've been doing the best I can. And yes, her file, which was from May of 18, did not have all the things I have now. And I have made sure also all my records, my paperwork, I have redone everything. And I was doing that, like I said, before the complaint, because I knew once I started practicing DBT, they taught me a lot of stuff that I did not know before that.
The last comment, and this is a comment question that I have. I was very happy to hear you say you're going to drop texting from the repertoire of services you provide because it's a black hole, and I see a lot of psychologists fall through it. Mm-hmm. So the hard question here is, have stopped texting as a modality of service for other scheduling appointments?
Right. So I have never used texting other than for logistics and billing ever. Mostly Samantha responds to those texts, and that's my assistant. And I had never texted with anyone to do skills coaching. And of course, I saw that there are pitfalls that I was trying so hard to avoid. And I think I avoided them for most of the time, like the first 16 months of treatment. And then I fell down. So I decided on my own, I'm like, I'm never going to text clinical information again. I'm not good at it. Okay. So I'm not going to even try it.
None of us are that good at it. So no,
it is a black hole. I'm very sorry. And I believe that the hurt and the stuff that happened was because of my choice to use text messaging. And it's like, I'm sure that I would not have like lashed out like in November at her if it weren't a text. You know, I was not mindful. I agree. I am very, very deeply regretful that I ever even touched text messaging for anything other than logistics.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bohansky. Are there any other questions? Just a reminder, this is an initial review. All right, hearing no other questions, I'd like to thank Dr. Galper and her attorney for being with us today. And we are now going to go into deliberations. Deliberations is a time where only the board members discuss the case amongst ourselves. Dr. Myers, you were the lead. Would you like to start the deliberations?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So I think based on the questions that were asked of Dr. Galper, it's pretty clear, and according to her acknowledgement, that there are significant problems with the records, but more so significant problems in training and unprofessional conduct in the services that she's providing. I think there are boundary issues. I'm no longer quite so concerned about the billing side of it. I do feel like that was addressed, but the consent not being done, not including the skills, no focus on following the rules of telepsychology. So I see significant violations here.
Are there any other comments, or do you have a motion?
I can make a motion now.
Are there any other comments from the board?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Dr. Flowers.
Yes, I agree with what has been stated by the other board members. I certainly can identify with the licensee. I was trained almost embarrassing to say, in the 70s. And indeed, how you practice and ethics and all that have, you know, most of the things are the same, but there have been some very significant differences in that time as far as what's needed, as far as doing treatment plans, risk assessments, advising the clients what to do if they're risks, all those kind of things. And as Dr. Bohansky mentioned, it's really for the benefit of the licensee as well as the consumer. That way you know you're hopefully on the same page for expectations. And when those are not done, problems can indeed happen, and rules of practice, principles of practice have changed, so that those of us who have been around a while need to do whatever we can to stay current. And I do appreciate the licensee's efforts to make changes. I'm glad that she is. I guess we look at a snapshot of what was going on with the treatment of HB, and indeed, I believe there were violations.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. I think you had a comment.
Yes, Madam Chair. I just want to emphasize the issues that were brought up regarding HB's allegations of issues of confidentiality about sharing information regarding third parties. I'd like to make a statement that confidentiality is the cornerstone of our profession of psychotherapy. And when you violate that, bad things can happen. So I think the ethical principles 4.01 of violations of confidentiality should be included in our rendering this case. Thank you.
This is Dr. Malott. I just wanted to state something. You know, I heard Dr. Galpo talk about texting and saying, you know, that's, she'd never text again. But regardless of communication, one needs to be professional. Regardless of source, there will be other ways of communicating in the future. And that is no excuse not to be professional, you know, whether you're texting, emailing, calling on the phone, leaving messages. As professionals, we expect professional communication. You know, some of the formalities may be dropped, like, you know, you don't sign it, or, you know, you don't say sincerely, but it still needs to be professional. So any type of communication needs to be professional.
Thank you, Dr. Malott. Any other comments?
I'd like to make one further point. Dr. Gill, thank you for bringing up the confidentiality. And I meant to ask more about this, because as I've looked over this several times, and I definitely see boundary issues, but I did not notice where a client's personal information was disclosed. Could you highlight that exactly? Because it sounded like there were discussions of family friends, and there were sharing of past clients, but as examples and not specifically identifiable people. So I saw a lot of that as more just boundary issues rather than actual a breach of confidentiality.
Was that directed at me or Dr. Galper?
Dr. Gill.
Oh, you know, you want me to respond? Well, that's a valid point. In reading this record, for example, HB had indicated that Dr. Galpert had made a list on a some kind of a website. She called it the Venmo Friends List. And on that list were names of clients. Now, that's an allegation.
Right. And she did address that. I mean, that's again, this is a tech issue, and what it said was those people weren't identified as clients. I understand that there's some lack of professionalism there. I don't know that there's a breach. There was no indication that this is a client. You could maybe make those assumptions, but that was what I was struggling with is do we see this as a clear breach of confidentiality?
Well, if I could say, HB also reported a number of discussions in therapy with Dr. Galpert, in which Dr. Galpert had mentioned or made reference to third parties. And I think HB gave a couple of examples in her commentary. And one of them was described as FF, a friend, a mutual friend of both the therapist and the client in this case. So to me, that crosses the boundary that we're speaking of regarding confidentiality.
Well, was F, I assumed FF meant family friend, but was that a client?
I believe it was, yes.
Can we ask, I'm going to take the liberty, I'm asking Dr. Galpert, is that a client?
No.
No, is that it? And was FF, as family friend, is that what it was referring to?
That's what the complainant called her.
Okay, complainant, can you clarify, please?
Yes. FF was not the client. FF is somebody that Dr. Galper knows from other non-clinical things in her life, and who's also a very close family friend. And what I was saying about the confidentiality wasn't that she told things about me to the person, but she disclosed things that I had said in session to the person, which the person knew it would only have come from me because she knew that I was a client. And then, so that was the issue. That was the intrusion on my life. That was the hardship and the way that it was followed up when Dr. Galper, continued pursuing an engagement with the family friend a couple months later in the documents that were in the first supplement from March. So it was like stoking the flames of distrust in my family circle.
You're alleging that Dr. Galper shared personal information about you with a family friend.
Personal information that identified me to a family friend. Yeah.
Identified your name or just your situation, which you felt they could then link
enough, back? Yeah, enough of my context that it could only have been me. And then you can see in the documents that she said a client this, a client that, it was figured out. So the things that were said were also untrue. So it created a tremendous hardship in my family. I'm still earning that person's trust back because of what Dr. Galper shared at that public event, and then the follow up with her in those. They were like a text through the Meetup app. It's like a message thing. So.
All right, thank you.
And then you can see the text where she denied that she had done it as well. So that was the other issue. I started to feel like, why is she lying to me about this? I'm sitting with the proof right here. So that was the other part of it.
All right, thank you. We're going to move back into deliberation. Thank you for those comments, though. Dr. Myers? You're on mute.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe, if that's accurate, that Dr. Galper's sharing information with other people, that is a breach. It seems like there's so much of this though, that's about abstinence technology and poor boundaries. I think that's the real concern. I don't see an intentional, breach of confidentiality.
I would agree with you, Dr. Myers. I don't think it was an intentional. I think it's something was said. They were able to link it back to the patient, but not a direct. I think it's more of a boundaries issue of information being released.
And I would agree.
Okay.
I would agree also.
All right. So, Dr. Myers, do you have a motion, or does anyone have a motion moving forward?
I do. 1 second here, sorry. And my motion is to move this to a
formal
interview. Is that correct?
Ms. Galvin, that's it. The next step is the formal interview.
If you want to keep it at the board level, an investigative hearing.
Investigative hearing.
An informal interview, I believe.
Or an informal. Informal interview.
Okay, so I move that we move this case forward to an informal interview based on possible violations related to RS 32-2061-16H. Failing to maintain adequate records, 16O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or unprofessional, and DD, violating an ethical standard as it pertains to 3.04, avoiding harm, and 3.10, informed consent. Those were the ones I had.
All right, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Dr. Flowers second the motion. Is there any discussion from the board members? Hearing none, if you could take yourself off mute, we're going to vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Both parties will be hearing from our board staff in regards to when this will be placed on the agenda again. We're going to move now to complaint 8B again. This is initial review for Dr. Scott Padella. Dr. Myers, you're the lead. Would you like to provide a summary of the case, of the complaint?
Yes, that would be good. Thank you. Give me 1 second to switch over. All right, thank you. Prior to obtaining licensure in Arizona, Dr. Padilla previously lived in Virginia, where he was licensed as a psychologist from 2013 to 2018. He provided individual services to the claimant LD from July 2014 to 2017. She was filing a complaint here because Dr. Padilla is no longer licensed in Virginia, and so this was the only board that she could reach out to. She alleged that Dr. Padilla engaged in inappropriate and dual relationship throughout treatment with her, as well as it continuing until she cut it off in November 2018. She was concerned that there was a personal relationship occurring during therapy and after therapy. She has not had contact with Dr. Padilla since she cut off their relationship in 2018. She stated that she came forward now after hearing about another allegation against Dr. Padilla, and that she realized her relationship with him was also inappropriate, unethical, and deeply harmful. She submitted records that included texts, emails, and pictures that highlighted actions such as spending time together, drinking together, and personal pictures sent back and forth. They started with just email interactions, then began to have text and phone calls, communicating on an almost daily basis for nearly the entire duration of their relationship. She felt her therapy seemed to center around Dr. Padilla himself and her relationship with him. She expressed numerous times that therapy seemed to be making her increasingly more dependent on Dr.
Padilla for comfort and a sense of security. They started being seeing each other outside of the therapy sessions, such as going out to eat at restaurants. He would also stop by her house just to hug her. And at times this also included drinking alcohol. She's alleging that Dr. Padilla's conduct caused emotional and mental damage to her husband, and their marriage. And she's spent the last several years working to process the trauma of the unethical relationship with Dr. Padilla. She denied that there was any sexual contact. There was physical contact, primarily related to prolonged hugs, and having an arm draped on her. Dr. Padilla responded and noted that he is not here to defend himself, takes full responsibility for his actions, and does not deny anything that she reported. He recognizes that this was a lapse in judgment and boundary violations regarding the interactions with the client. He acknowledged that he has already been addressing this based on his practice monitor from a previous allegation, and that he's working on these specific issues. And we've also received two quarterly reports from Dr. Ramirez, his practice monitor, and that concludes my summary of the case.
Thank you, Dr. Myers. Is the complainant here today? If you, OD, I believe it's OD.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it. LD, I'm going to give you an opportunity if you would like to make any comments to the board. Some of the board members may have questions for you after your comments.
Yes, thanks. I'm going to just read something I prepared ahead of time. It should take about 4 minutes. So much of what I had to say, I already said in the complaint screening committee meeting and won't repeat here. The only thing I do want to repeat is that the messages I've provided are incomplete. I was not able to recover text messages from before 2016. And since Scott was not always using an Apple device, my iMessage archives did not always capture his side of the conversation, which is why some messages appear incomplete. Beyond this, I just want to respond to and clarify something Scott said in the previous meeting about this case. One thing Scott claimed during that meeting was that the primary reason I struggled so much with him ending our therapy and moving away was because of all the progress I had made in therapy with him. This is not true. In fact, in the 3 years I worked with Scott, I only deteriorated. I sought and initiated therapy with Scott because I had just gotten married and was struggling with the transition, which brought up old traumas from my past. I had identified I needed professional help to process these traumas, and I did not want to inappropriately lean on friends or my husband for something that required professional assistance. I was not self-harming and had not done so for many years. I had friends, hobbies, and was successful in my career. Over the course of 3 years, as I became more dependent on Scott and tried to cope with the intense and overwhelming feelings that our confusing relationship brought about, I began self-harming increasingly more seriously until I was doing so in life-threatening ways, which, yes, Scott did know about. I developed an eating disorder and lost a dangerous amount of weight. I began struggling to do my job until my employer eventually confronted me, asking if I needed a leave of absence just to deal with my mental health issues. I stopped seeing all of my friends and canceled anything on my schedule just to make sure I could see Scott. I went from not needing medication to needing increasingly more medication to get through every day. I eventually was hospitalized in a psychiatric unit after my daughter was born when I developed severe postpartum mental health issues. Not because Scott realized I needed it, though he should have, since we were texting literally all night long for months about how severe it was getting, but because my family finally intervened. In fact, Scott was uncharacteristically difficult to get a hold of and largely unhelpful when I was trying to figure out how to go about getting into the hospital, and later told me that it was because it made him feel like a failure, that I was his and he wanted to be the one to help me. Scott has told you I made considerable progress while I was his client. I would challenge him to name one goal we accomplished in our therapy, because I cannot think of any, unless you wish to count the goal of his sitting next to me with an arm around me and my head on his shoulder. This was, in fact, a goal that he stated multiple times he had for us, and the only one we had accomplished. I left my therapy with Scott requiring years of intensive trauma therapy to recover from him. When Scott told me he was leaving, I had so much difficulty with it because he had fostered a deep dependence on him. I was driving to his office nearly every night to hug him because it was the only thing that calmed my anxiety, most of which was centered around him. I was spending every session, 2 to 3 times a week, leaning against him with his arm around me, and I felt I couldn't survive without that. He would even tuck a little stuffed animal I brought with me into his shirt during our sessions just to make it smell like him so that I could bring it home with me and have his scent for comfort between sessions. He had become my one and only coping mechanism and resource, despite my asking him numerous times to help me come up with other resources, because I knew that he could not be my only answer when things were difficult. But always his response was that I didn't need to worry about the future, because he would always be there. Finally, I want to conclude by expressing my concern that Scott did not discuss my case with his practice monitor until he discovered that I had filed this complaint, which is so similar to the complaint you heard against him last year. If, as he said, this has only ever happened with one other client besides me, I don't understand how he could, as he said, talk about his problematic practices and behaviors in general terms with his practice monitor. Either this sort of thing has only happened twice, or it has happened so many times that it can be discussed in general terms. That's all I have. Thank you again for giving me the chance to speak.
No, thank you for being with us today. We do appreciate it. Board members, do you have any questions for LD? All right, hearing none. LD, thank you very much for being with us. We're going to move on to Dr. Padilla.
Ms. Shreve, I think Dr. Bohansky has a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dr. Bohansky, thanks.
Yes, thank you. Just a couple quick questions. And thank you for being here and presenting very difficult remembrances of this relationship. Did any professional services or were any professional services provided here in Arizona?
They were not. However, our relationship continued while he was practicing in Arizona. But nothing formally documented as a professional service was provided with his license as a therapist, if that makes sense. We had a personal relationship still by the time when he moved into Arizona until I cut off our relationship in November 2018, but he was no longer being paid to be my therapist.
Okay. Did you have another therapist while you maintained this professional or personal relationship with Scott?
Yes, I had an individual therapist when Scott was moving, and I was also in group therapy, group trauma therapy, specifically centered around this relationship, and I still have a personal therapist now that I am seeing.
Okay, and those are Arizona therapists?
No, they were all in Virginia. I lived in Virginia, so all of the therapists that I have seen have been in Virginia.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions? Dr. Wahansky.
I have a question for our attorney.
Yes.
Ms. Galvin, does this board have standing to hear this case as there were no professional services rendered by the psychologist in Arizona, according to the complainant?
You do. Your statute under ARS 2061-16 in the definition of unprofessional conduct states that unprofessional conduct includes the following activities, whether occurring in this state or elsewhere.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to be clear with that because the unusual temporal relationship of service provision.
No, very good question. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Bohansky and Ms. Galvin. Any other questions from the board for LD? All right, hearing none, thank you, LD. We're going to move now to Dr. Padilla. Dr. Padilla, do you have any comments, opening comments for the board?
Thank you guys again for the opportunity to respond. I have very few opening comments, very few comments in general. You know, I still do not want to take a posture of defense against what is being said. I think there are a lot of perspective differences, but I think it would be unnecessary or a waste of time to try to really split those hairs. I fully agree that prior to moving to Arizona, I had very loose, very questionable boundaries, understanding of professional, ethical standards of behavior within the capacity of a therapist. With this particular client, I maintain that I cared a great deal about her, her husband, her future daughter, you know, her well-being. I understand that LD's impression is that my interactions with her were self-serving and centered around my own ego and needs there. And to some degree, I want to validate that. I want to say that at the time I had what I've been referring to as a bit of a Superman complex with this client. She was the most, her needs were the most intense of any client I had ever had at that time. And I felt like I would be able to rise above, go above and beyond, bend over backwards to, help her, you know, conquer her demons and overcome her difficulties. And at times that took the form of, you know, her waiting outside the office, my office building, until I was done with my last client after dark. And she'd be waiting in the parking lot next to my car for a hug or a reality check that I was still there. Things like that, that at this time today, present tense, I would not do. I would not entertain. I would not engage in. At the time I said, yes, I'm happy to give you a hug. I am happy to show you that you matter. I'm happy to show you that I care. I'm happy to, if you need outside of session contact, if you need texting, if you need emailing, if you need anything, sure, let me do that. Because I want you to be very, very clear that all the things that you came to me saying about how you don't matter, how you're not worthy of this, that you don't deserve that, are untrue. And I took those all on myself. And, you know, it didn't take much more than, you know, Dr. Flowers and others during my last run with this board to very clearly educate and illuminate for me how wrong those approaches were, how inappropriate those approaches were. And I was taken to task on very similar, as LD is saying, very similar behaviors when I was practicing with somebody here in Arizona. So what I didn't know last year, I didn't know 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, but I certainly know now. I don't know how much weight the board members are putting on the quarterly reports that my practice monitor has provided for you during this hearing. But I like to think that the issues that I came to him with after the first complaint hearing last year have been very much discussed, understood, and my behaviors and my practice and my approach to clients has changed an insurmountable amount. So I apologize, not that it matters, not that it changes anything, but I'm very sorry to LD. The last communication that she and I had was, you know, I need to stop talking to you because it's having a bad impact on my relationship. It's I don't want it to hurt my marriage that I've worked really hard on you know, improving or making good. You know, I'll always love you. I wish the best for you, but thank you and goodbye. And that was it in 2018. And I still feel nothing but care for this person, for her husband, for her daughter, for her cats, for everybody that I know about in her life. And the fact that my interaction with her has caused her pain or has caused her trauma, as she refers to it as, or has caused her family any kind of negative anything that really, really hurts. It tears me up, and I wish I could go back and undo it. But what I'm doing instead is changing how I practice now, changing my behaviors now. And I hope that matters.
All right. Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Padilla?
I'd be happy to start.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Padilla, thank you. The biggest concern I have is that this is very similar to the previous allegation. And as LD pointed out, if you were examining with your practice monitor these issues, why was there no discussion of other problematic behavior? Or, I have a hard time at this point seeing this is only two instances of this behavior, and no reason to see why it's not every client you've had and could be ongoing. I mean, why was this not discussed with your practice monitor?
Absolutely. So agreed, there was no specific mention of this particular client and any in-depth discussion about LD. When I talked to my practice monitor about the behaviors that I came to him with from the first hearing complaints process, we talked about the fact that this is a pattern of behavior. I had prior to the last complaint, very concerning lapses and lacks in judgment and boundaries. And it wasn't assigned to any particular case or client that I was talking to him about. It was just, you know, you got put in front of the board because of a complaint that a client that was brought in front of the board, and that's a problem if this is the kind of behavior that you are used to doing or going to continue to do. So I have always, I'll say that LD was not the only client who I had, you know, a very open access to. People could email me whenever, people could text me whenever, people could call me whenever. And I would say that LD is I don't want to say only one, but I that's what I'm inclined to say, the only person who utilized my accessibility and availability to anywhere near the level that she did. So other people who could text me didn't, except for, you know, scheduling or last minute emergency stuff. Other people who could email me anytime didn't. Other people who could call me anytime didn't. Nobody else was showing up at my office. Nobody else was showing up, you know, before, after hours. Nobody was texting or calling me all night long. No, I didn't meet anybody for outside of office meetings.